You're listening to The Crossover with Joe R. Lucas.
Welcome back, EuroLeague fans, to another edition of The Crossover with Joe R. Lucas. I spoke with my today's guest last year during the playoffs, and he asked me when he was going to be on the show. I told him I'd make it happen, and here he is. One of the best long-range shooters in the game, Mr. James Nunnally from Part Design. How are you, my man? Happy New Year, brother.
Happy New Year to you, man. Thank you for having me on the show.
Hey, thank you for wanting to be on the show. I like the fact that guys are starting to come up to me and do, you know, you're one of the guys that came up and said, hey, man, when you gonna have me on the show? That makes me feel great, man. As someone who used to do what you do, now I'm trying to transfer, you know, into another world.
Man, and you do it well. You do this segment of life well as you did on the court, man.
Thank you, man. Yeah, let's get right into it, man. You know, this is all about you and family and growing up, and you're from what I call the other coast.
Yes.
You know, I'm a New Yorker, born and bred. And you're from the other side. You know that strange 3-hour difference where like the NFL games go off at 6. Mm-hmm. And you know the Monday night games go off at 6 or 10 in the morning on Sundays.
Mm-hmm. That's the best coast, we call it.
Yeah, we call ours the East. You call yours the best, right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I know. Hey, I love it out there, man. I love it. It's beautiful. It really is.
Nothing like it, man. I'm blessed to be able to be, you know, born and raised there. I have love for the East Coast as well. You know. Got a lot of friends from the East Coast, and you know it's all the.
Let's talk about a little bit like high school growing up when you started playing. What I read that you played all the sports. You played baseball. You played football. I think like most athletes did in the States back in the day.
Mm-hmm.
What was the one sport that you excelled at, that you'd probably be better at today than you would be if you weren't playing basketball?
I was not to, you know, be cocky or arrogant or anything, but I was really good at football.
Baby,
I was really good at football.
What position did you play?
I was quarterback and safety.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Yeah, that was back. We always had to go. You always had to go defense and offense.
Yeah. Yeah. We had to go defense because we had to play both sides because where I grew up, you know, staying eligible was pretty difficult for some, you know. So we would start with about 35, 40 guys, and then we'd be down to 17, 17 to 20 when the first round of grades came out. But football, I grew up, you know, liking football more than basketball. But then I, you know, fell in love with basketball, watched my older brother play. You know, I was just his shadow. I would follow him around. So, you know, he was highly recruited. And so I was like, man, I want to play basketball like my brother.
Okay. And you guys played against each other, didn't you?
Played against each other in college. Yeah, we did.
In college.
Yeah.
You were at Pacific, right?
No, he was at Pacific. I was at UC Santa Barbara.
Oh, that's right. You were at Santa Barbara. He was at Pacific. My bad. How was that game? I mean, especially since he's older, bro, you're following him around, like trying to follow his shoes.
Oh, man. It was cool. You know, when they came down to play us, you know, we hung out the whole night before the game and just had a good time. A lot of my family came. I think like 20, 25 of our family members came and
really
watched the game. Yeah, it was fun. It was exciting.
You talked about growing up where you lost, you know, people along the way, so to speak, with grades and stuff like that. Did you grow up in a difficult neighborhood?
Yeah.
I'm trying to put it politically correct, you know.
Yeah, it was a difficult neighborhood. Tough.
You could have went a different way also? One of those type of neighborhoods?
Yeah, most definitely. Stockton, California is not a, you know, easy place to grow up at. But right. it gave me the character I have now. You know, looking back on it, you know, those split decisions, you know, you could, you know, go left or you can go right. And I'm blessed I had, you know, a mom who really cared and made sure I stayed out of trouble and a brother who, you know, who guided me as well. I had good friends, but, you know, there was times where I didn't do the right thing and I could have went down that wrong path. I've had I've lost some friends along the way, but I'm blessed to be, you know, from, you know, raised in Stockton. Right. It taught me a lot about life early.
You still go back there often? Like, and your family's still there?
Yeah, my mom, my brother, a few cousins, a lot of friends are there, you know. This is where I grew up at.
Dude, so you ball out in college and do your thing at Santa Barbara, and you know, every guy's dream, obviously, when they get to that point, is getting drafted, and that didn't actually go well for you, so to speak. Mm-hmm. You were, let's say you were lucky enough, as I was, when there was still 13 rounds of the draft back.
13 rounds, that is nuts.
Yeah. No, my bad. When there was 13 rounds. When I got drafted, there was 7, and I got drafted in the 4th. No. So I did make the draft, although, you know, nowadays it doesn't really count. It's the 4th round. I think I was a 72nd pick or something like that. And I was actually drafted by the Kings.
Which still counts. That counts.
Yeah, I guess it counts. What was that like for you? I mean, were you expected did you expect to be drafted? Did you get any information? Were you sitting around waiting for your name to be called?
I had 3 workouts with the Kings, actually.
Oh, you did? Okay.
Yeah, so, like, I thought there was a chance where I could, like, go, like, in the late second, like, one of the last picks if they had it. But then it happened, which I didn't get drafted. But one of my best friends and teammates got drafted in that same draft, Orlando Johnson. Okay. He got drafted. So, you know, I was happy for him, but I was like, damn, I didn't get drafted. What am I going to do now? Like, I was kind of, like, hurt. But I had to realize, you know, I didn't work hard enough in college. Like, while I was in college, I started after college, like, working harder, focusing more onto what I wanted to do. But I think that gave me the hunger to pursue my career and, you know, to get where I wanted to get to and to accomplish what I wanted to, and it helped me a lot.
You think the lack of work ethic came from maybe you not being sure that you were going to go, you just kind of like.
I know
you said he's your best friend, he's your boy, but that's gotta kill you to see your boy get drafted and you're not. I mean, come on.
Like I don't know if I'm gonna get drafted, but. For sure, I knew he was gonna get drafted. Like, he was really, really dominant. Right. Yeah, I knew he was gonna get drafted. So I was happy for him, like 100% happy for him. Like, we're roommates, lived next door to each other in college, so it's like we had a great relationship. I think the lack of work ethic came from me just being, you know, a kid in college, wanting to have fun, stay up late, party. I was enjoying college and not really getting those extra hours in the gym like I should have been. You know,
they always say like life is a bitch, you know, and sometimes after you went undrafted, you had, let's say, an interesting 4 years of your life coming from, you know, Santa Barbara, not being drafted, not having any clarity on what your future is going to be like, which is, I think, the hardest thing for anybody coming out of college that's not 100% sure they're going NBA. Yep. And man, you just got kicked around and like torn down, so to speak. You went to Greece.
Yes.
Played in Greece.
Left Greece.
You someone told you probably weren't going to get paid.
No, they didn't tell me. I just didn't get paid. And after, you know, I kept going to like the office, the general manager. And I was like, "Yo, when am I getting my money?" They're like, "4 or 5 days, you'll have it next week." So next week comes around, and you know they were lying. So I was like, "All right, let me get my ducks in order because I'm about to make a move."
Right.
And so one night, or after I practiced one day, I was like, "Hey, I need my money." Like, I didn't say it that nice, but I was like, I need my fucking money. And I practiced, I dunked on somebody, finished practice. And then the next morning, my agent was like, "Hey, we're gonna reroute your ticket back from May or June to tomorrow." I was like, "Can you get packed up?" I was like, "Yep, I get packed up." Packed up, 3 a.m. rolled around, got a taxi to the airport.
got out of there. I got you for 11 teams in 8 years. And look, I don't even have Cavalla on there on my list.
Really?
I got you Estudiantes, Maccabi Ashad, yep. Feliz Scandone, Fenerbahce, Minnesota Timberwolves, Houston Rockets, Olympia yep. Milano, Shanghai yep. Sharks, yeah. Fenerbahce again, New Orleans yep. Pelicans, and Maccabi Tel Aviv, and now Partizan.
Wow. Yeah, that's a lot of teams. That's a lot of flights.
And that's a lot in just 8 years, too.
Wow. Yeah, a road well traveled.
And so, you know, I just went over the team, so I don't want to get, like, deep into that. But my, I guess, you know, you went to Italy, and you got kind of a break in Italy. You know, you came up with the league MVP, and you know, and I'm just wondering, like, my thing is, how does a guy like you that's been kicked around so often, doesn't get drafted, whatever, you went from country to country, 11 teams in 8 years, all this stuff, obviously this all before, and how the hell does Zeljko Obradovic find you and sign you? And not only does he sign you to his team, but he signs you, of course, in something where he's building a winning culture. Mm-hmm. You know, how does that opportunity come? I mean, I know you played well in Italy the year before, and I know I've read in your articles that kind of like made you want to play basketball again, gave you like a new look on life, I guess, as far as you know your profession is concerned. But how the hell does Zeljko find you?
I mean, that Avellino, I was hooping. Avellino, it was a great team too. You know, I had good vets. I had Marty Lunin, Marcus Green, you know, Alex Acker. I had good vets, you know, and we had other good players on the team as well, like Joe Raglan. I don't know, you know, I was like one of the only new players on the team who had just went to the Final Four, you know, the year before the championship. So I was like, damn, he wants to add me, huh? And I had, honestly, I'm gonna tell you, I had no idea who he was. No idea.
I love it.
All my agent told me was like, hey, this coach is gonna challenge you, but you should be good. That's all he told me. Exact words. I was like, all right. And then
and then hello Zeljko.
Yes. Met with Maurizio Gherardini in Vegas. Maurizio, and signed yeah. and signed the contract.
And again, I mean your year in Italy, I guess I want to know, like, after 4 years of struggles, mm-hmm. the stupid question here is, how many times did you doubt yourself? You know what I mean? How many times were you doubting, like, your journey? But I'm known for asking stupid questions, so
no, it's not a stupid question. Throw it out there. Honestly, I never like just doubted myself. I just always like wanted to raise the bar each year. I just wanted to just go up, step up each year. That was my goal, you know. Just go get paid more each year. That was my goal, like when I was first starting out. And
but was that happening though? Because you were going from summer leagues to, you know, NBA teams to yep. you know, you went to Estudiantes for a minute. You said, I can't really see that your pay rate. I can't see you getting pay raises by being kicked around, you know, all over.
From Ashdod to Estudiantes to Avellino was a big increase. I'll tell you that.
It was a big increase.
Yeah, it was a big increase for the level I was at. So I was excited about that.
Okay. Okay.
And then once we got from Avellino to Fenner, it was.
Then we're,
you know,
we're
at a certain level. You're at a certain level. So.
and now you don't want to look back, do you?
No, there's no looking back.
The only time we look back now is to remember those days and enjoy what we have now.
100%, and to be grateful, you know, for the struggles early.
Exactly, man.
But you know, coach, playing for him and like, you know, building a relationship with him, it was tough. You know, like the first year playing for him is tough, as you know.
Oh yeah,
it's tough. You know, because he has to build that trust. You have to like earn his respect. He's played at the highest level, you know, in Europe. He's played in the Olympics. he's coached the best players. It's like, you know, he's seen everything. So, all right, what are you going to do to be different or to stand out or to even get his respect? So
it kills you sometimes when you play for him, because like sometimes you just want to tell him he's wrong, but he's got so much with him behind him that, you know, you can't question him.
Mm-hmm. Or if you question it, he says something and then, oh damn, I'm wrong.
Look, man, I'll tell you a great story about Shelko that a lot of people probably know it already, but when I hated Shelko at first, man, I was like, cause we had a player's coach, so to speak, before Shelko. It was like one of those guys where, you know, you could talk to him, you could negotiate with him. Hey man, we're tired tomorrow, man, better not to practice. You know, and he sometimes he listened to you, sometimes he wouldn't, but he didn't have that push, you know what I mean? And then Shelko comes and we're all like, yeah, you know, Shelko Obradovic, because he had just beat us the year before in the EuroLeague when he won with Juventud. He knocked us out. We were the favorites. And so we're like, yeah, we got Shelko, man. He showed up. I was like, after 3 days, I was like, man, get this guy out of here. So we start the league poorly. We have a team meeting with the president. And the president walks in like 20 minutes late. And the president starts to talk. And Shelko steps up and he says, Mr. President, before you start, I have two things. He's like, number one is you never, ever, ever get rid of one of my practices again without letting me know ahead of time, because I have a schedule that I'm on. And it isn't a, he said, number two, if you meet with my players, you be here 10 minutes before my players show up, and don't ever disrespect my team again by showing up late.
Ooh.
And man, I looked over, I'm like, that's the dude I want to play for.
Exactly.
That's the guy I want to play for, because I know when push comes to shove, he's got my back.
100%.
And that's what Shelko is all about for me.
Yeah, 100%. But it doesn't feel like that in certain moments. But he does. No. He does have his back. He plays his back. And I respect that tremendously.
He's one of the only coaches I played for that's actually able to distinguish the difference between those four white lines, what happens inside and what happens outside.
Uh-huh.
And you know, I mean, like I've always said, he's become one of my best friends, just because even though for 3 years I couldn't stand the man. You know,
yeah.
All the time.
I think 3 years is that hump. So after third year, after fourth or fifth and sixth, whatever, you understand it.
Exactly.
But you need one more year.
But you're always surprised by what he might come up with. You're always surprised. Man, you guys had a squad, dude. I mean, that squad was sick. Yeah, my boy, my Ali Muhammad. But yeah, ooh, to me, it's always Bobby Dixon.
Man, Bobby Dixon. Hey, shout out to him, man. He was a great vet to have and to be around. He made it easier.
He's probably one of my favorite podcasts of all that I've done. His story's crazy.
His story is crazy. After, like, when he told me about it, I was like, wow. Yeah, I didn't know you went through all this.
Yeah. It's nuts, man. It's like, I just sat there. I remember I did it. It was back before COVID, so I did it in a hotel, and I was able to, like, sit down and, like, you know, face-to-face with him and see the emotion, which was, you know, it was just great. It was great. But you had Vesely, Datomi, Slukas. You had Bogdanovic when Bogdan was just, I mean, he was a kid.
He looked like a kid.
he still kind of looks like, he still looks like a kid.
Though. Man, yeah. Until you hear him talk.
Talking smack or what?
Nah, he's just the deepest voice in the world.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah.
Dude, but coming into this team, were you concerned about playing time? Were you concerned about what your spot would be? I mean, coming from where you're coming from, I keep going back to that because I think that the journey that we all have, it goes unrecognized sometimes. People just see you for where you are now, and they don't see what you had to go to get there. And what's your mental process coming into a team like Fenerbahce, who's aspiring all of a sudden for a European championship?
I was like, well, like before that list you mentioned, before those teams, I was on the Hawks and I was on the Sixers. So.
Right.
I was like, hey, I'm an NBA player. Like I can play anywhere. That's how my mentality was. Like I can play anywhere. And I didn't really know who those guys were. Like honestly, I didn't watch the Final Four before. I didn't really care to watch it. Like Ivan Buva, he had invited me to watch the Final Four. And I was like, nah, I'm good.
Which
I'm gonna eat some of his pasta.
Which, which Final Four was it? What year?
It was the final. It was Avelino when I was on Avelino because we were teammates.
Who was in that Final Four? I'm trying to remember.
It
I'm,
was
I'm
Fenner. It was Fenner, Cheska.
Oh, okay. Real Madrid.
Basconia.
Oh, okay, Basconia, yeah.
And I forgot the fourth team.
Had to be Real Madrid, right?
No, Locomotive.
Oh, that okay, that year. Okay, yeah.
Yeah, that was my year. I was in Avellino in May, and Buva was like, hey, you want to come watch the game? I was like, nah, I'm not watching. I'm going to go. I had no idea.
That's when Zelko went crazy and ran out on the court against Basconia.
See, I had no idea about any of that. So
yeah,
I went to a team I had no clue about. And then I watched Serbia versus the United States in the Olympics. And so I was like, okay, these are my teammates. Let me watch, see how my teammates are, like Bogdan and Kalinic. So let me see how they are. And
talking about your first experience in Europe, man, like between Greece, between Italy. I know they were quick ones. But like you hit like Spain, you hit Italy, you hit Greece, you hit three countries in a short period of time. What for a guy that never even knew those places existed, to go in there and live in there and having not good experiences, man, what makes you want to come back again other than money?
My experience in Ashdod was great. I loved Ashdod and like that whole experience and like the how the club treated me and how they treated like, you know, my wife, who was my girlfriend at the time, she came. Right. She got to ride on the bus with us to away games, and like they treated us really good. Like our team, I had great teammates. So that experience like was like, all right. I didn't like Spain. I didn't like Estudiantes.
Man, you didn't like Madrid, and you like to go out and have fun.
No, I didn't really want to go out because the basketball wasn't right. If the basketball is not right, I don't want to. You know, I didn't. It was like, I'm over this place.
Madrid's the best nightlife around, man.
The coach, we had one game a week, and the coach was like, hey, you know, I want to play you. You know, you're one of our best players. I want to play you 22 to 25 minutes a game. I'm like, why? We have one game a week. Keep me in.
Man, you would have loved playing. You would have loved playing when I played. We played 38, 40 minutes a game.
Loved it.
Yeah. Man,
that's every player. You know, every player thinks they can play 38 minutes and 40 minutes, but you realistically, it's hard.
Yeah, it's tough. We practice twice a day too, no matter what. It didn't matter when we were there.
I couldn't imagine.
So with Fed, and all of a sudden you find yourself in the playoffs against Panathinaikos, right?
Yep.
And you guys sweep Panathinaikos. That was another huge story we won't get into. But now all of a sudden, man, you're coming from all this stuff, man, and you got a ticket to the Final Four. And on top of it, I mean, not too many people get to play the Final Four in their home court, their home city, I should say.
Yeah, that was great. Great experience.
I mean, that's got to be. I mean, how many times do you like go to sleep at night, close your eyes, and just kind of look back and, man, I'm either lucky, I'm fortunate, I'm good. You know, I don't know what it is, but I'm just glad to be here.
I was just thinking, man, we made some great decisions. Me and my wife and my agent, we made some great decisions. Like, going to that team is like, who had aspirations. The championship was the only thing that we ever talked about. I was like, hey, we don't win a championship, it's not a good season.
Right. In the semis, y'all beat Madrid. And I don't think I'll ever forget that game because I always question why Nocioni didn't play. He didn't even dress in that game. And why Felipe Reyes didn't even come off the bench while I was sitting there, you know, commentating the game, watching Jan and what?
Udo.
I was just watching them go crazy, the two of them. And I'm sitting, and I'll never forget looking at Madrid's bench going, man, where did that go wrong? I mean, but y'all dominated that game. It's 84-75 final score, but it felt like, to me, it felt like there was no doubt who was going to win that game.
Yeah, we controlled the game. We definitely controlled that game. Playing with, you know, those two guys on the switch is like, yeah, all right, you're going to attack Jan or you're going to attack Ep. It's not going to happen. It's tough. They're great defenders.
Yeah, that was just an interior combo, man. It was just they were so and they played so well together too, you know. Because Jan ended up, I don't know where he developed that little 10-12 foot shot from the elbow from, but I love watching him shoot that shot, man. The poor guy couldn't make a foul shot to save his life, but he'll stick that jumper all day long.
Yeah, his 10-15 footer is money.
It's money, man, and it's like line drive too.
But Oberon made him work on that shot. During practice, we have to shoot our 50 and 10, 50 shots, 10 free throws each side. He would have him just working on that elbow.
I mean, it's just repetitive nature, man. If you do it enough times, you're going to get it. And the final, you guys control too, man. The championship against Olympiacos. To me, I've been around now doing Final Four since 2013, I think. Something like that. And that was the most dominant Final Four I think I've seen from a team. Just there were no, y'all left like no doors open for surprises, no nothing. You guys just looked like when you got there, you were winning it easily.
Home court advantage helped, for sure.
Well, yeah. I mean, no doubt that helps. But it wasn't home court advantage, so to speak, but you had all your people there.
We had everybody there.
Yeah. It was incredible.
You know, it was like, you know, having great players, you know, that's what they do, you know. They close out games. And the first play of the game was a oop off the tip.
Yeah, oh, yeah, that's right.
Reverse. Y'all invested reverse from it. That was crazy. That was nuts. Like, to start the game off that way.
That wasn't a setup play, was it?
It was a setup play.
But for an alley-oop, not, you know.
It was set up for an oop,
oop. Yeah, but not a reverse dunk like that. I think he made a little bit more special.
Oh, man, that's Vesely Airlines right there.
That was crazy. And what's it like, man? I mean, like, it's got to be surreal. Because you won that Final Four, then you go on to win the Turkish Airlines. You win the
Turkish League.
Turkish League also. But, I mean, winning that European Championship, I mean, dude, I'm picturing you, like, in the locker room, just, like, holding on to the cup, you know what I mean, a little bit, you know, doing your thing, drinking a little champagne, and just thinking about, you know, being in Greece and not getting paid, and, you know,
man,
being in the Summer League and to me, it's just a great story, you know?
Yeah, once we won that championship, I forgot everything in the past. I was like, man, this is like a great moment. Like, when, like, because you don't get to experience that type of stuff and like that type of win. That's like winning an NBA championship.
Yeah.
That's the equivalent of winning an NBA championship in Europe.
And it's more difficult to win the championship here than it is there, you know, because usually with a seven-game series, the better team wins. It's very rare that the better team doesn't win in the NBA. Here, it's like it's always a surprise.
One game.
So now the hardest thing to do in EuroLeague, although it's happened, you know, a couple of years ago with Efes, is repeat. And you get the 2017-18 league coming up. And, I mean, you had some good performances. I mean, you're money from 3 points. I mean, at one point for the season, you were 59%. That's sick, dude. Let's go. Let me go 59.5 to be exact.
You know, that's crazy.
If I was studying for a game, I would have probably just put you up to 60% just for the hell of it, just to make it sound better.
Just round it up.
But,
round this.
But dude, 44-74 from three, and I, as a 3-point shooter, I got to believe you attribute that to all the players around you, because someone's got to be left open because of all the guys you got going to the basket and you setting up your shot. You get a better look at the basket. You don't get many of those. I know three point shooters hate that ball where you get it 5 seconds left and you got to take a dribble left, right, and fade away.
I mean, like 5 seconds, I'm cool with that. 5 seconds, I'm good with that. I can make something happen. Two ones, those are the toughest ones. You just got to throw a bomb.
Yeah.
But, you know, like I had, like, as you said, like I had a squad around me. Like, and that was the second year. Bobby Dixon, Kostas Slukas, you know, Gigi, Nicola Melli, Brad Wanamaker, Jason Thompson, like Kalinich, like Vesely, like we had the same guys, you know. El Gudrich is on the team as well, too. So, like,
yeah, Gudrich, you know, signed that year because Bogdanovich left.
Yep. We had guys like, we had guys who were unselfish, you know, just the best shot. Gigi was shooting the hell out of the ball, too, that season. We had
you make it sound like Gigi couldn't shoot.
Nah, he was like shooting the, like, I was like, man, he's shooting 52. Like, we had, like, it was crazy. We had a squad, man. And I'm fortunate to play with like a lot of those guys.
Dude, I hate to bring this part up, but it's, I always talk about, you know, the bad parts.
Ooh.
The fall.
Oh,
the
man.
The fall, man. I saw it years ago, never really wanted to see it again. And when I started researching this, I had to watch it again. And you know, it's a common thing that happens because of the momentum and the pace y'all run at. And when you get, when you don't, you know, when you got all your momentum going forward and your legs are going forward and you just grab on that rim just that little bit. Man, go through that with me, man. It's just like, I know you don't remember like exactly what was going through your mind during the fall.
No, I remember. I'll tell you. I haven't told many people, but I was so upset at Obra for not playing me. He put me in like the end of the third quarter. The whole game, I didn't play.
Oh, you didn't play the whole game?
The whole game until like the end of the third, like the last 3 minutes of the third quarter. And I was sitting on the bench just fuming. I was like, what the fuck is going on? I was like, damn, why am I not gonna play? And I was just sitting there hot, fuming. And then he puts me in. And so I think like the first play I go in, I get a steal, I get a score, and then I get an assist, and I'm making things happen. We're down. And then that play comes. Brad, I think, gets a steal. He tosses it up. I was about to dunk it so hard one hand and just look at and just stare Coach down because I knew a timeout was coming. It's like, I should have been in. And it didn't go like that. So I was sitting on my feet to dunk one hand, and I see Mbubua come and swipe at the ball last minute. So I pick the ball up, jump off the wrong foot, dunk it with two hands, and I didn't have enough, like, I jumped off the wrong foot, so I didn't get up. You know, high enough, and I
yeah, so you couldn't
it.
Grab onto the rim.
I couldn't grab onto the rim, and I tried. And then once I dunked it, all I hear, like, everything went quiet, and then I just heard like a pop sound, and that's all I remember. I just heard like a pop, maybe from the rim. I don't know what it was, but everything was like quiet. And I remember waking up and going through the hospital doors. That's all I remember.
Really? Damn.
That's all I remember.
It's so crazy that you only broke your left hand.
Yeah, I broke my left hand, and I had
you had a concussion, yeah.
And I had nine brain hemorrhages. So, like, my brain was, like, had small, is bleeding in nine different spots.
Okay. All right. I was going to say that. I mean, the reports that I heard, you only broke your left hand and had a minor concussion. I was like, man, it had to be more than that.
You're
lucky there's no spinal or neck injuries more than anything else. That was,
wow. Yeah. I was fortunate, man. It was, and then I didn't want to watch it. I didn't want to watch the fall. People kept tagging me in it. You tagged me, I'm blocking you. Like, I didn't want to see it. Like, why are you sending it to me? Like, I lived it. So I avoided watching it for like a year, and I finally watched it.
Was your wife watching the game?
My wife and my daughters, you know, were at the game. And then
they were
at the game. Yeah. So my wife, my neighbor, and like my nanny took our kids back to like our place. And my wife came with me in the ambulance.
Hospital. Right.
To the hospital. And then, She said when we were driving to the hospital, I woke up And I tried to go, I tried to get back in the game.
You probably woke up yelling at Shogo.
Yeah, I was probably mad at him. I'm having nightmares about him not playing me. But I tried to, she said, you tried to wake up and get in the game, and the doctors grabbed you and like had to hold you down or whatever. And so I fell, I guess I passed back out.
Damn.
And then it's crazy.
And what about rehabbing for that? I mean, you know, the left hand is one thing, but the hemorrhages and everything else, I mean, were there any moments where you started to think like, man, am I going to be the same player? Is it, you know?
I was definitely hesitant to like dunk the ball. I'll tell you that. Like still like sometimes I like, I'll think of like, damn, do I have enough room or somebody around me? To this day, but
right.
Like the rehab was okay. Like I was, they didn't like, you know, they didn't force me to come back quick at all. They like, hey, take your time. I had to do so many like CT scans on my brain and like for like a week or 2 weeks, about 2 weeks, I had to go to the doctors a lot before they would even like consider letting me start the rehab process.
Okay.
Damn. And then by the third week, I played.
That's crazy, man. It's just like, you know, I mean, you've been worse off, like, you know, twisting an ankle or blowing a knee out. One of the scariest scenes I've ever seen, you know, on the court. It's crazy.
Yeah.
So you got back in time to go to the Final Four again the next year. And that was going to be, I think that was in Serbia. That was going to be Selko's 10th title.
Yeah. It would have
if y'all
ten.
Won that. Was that talked about? Was the you know, not only his 10th title, but in his hometown?
I think there was definitely extra pressure on the some of the other guys, you know, especially like the Serbian players and stuff, and him to win that, you know, 10th championship in Serbia, in Belgrade. Bobby saved us the first game against Zagreb.
Yeah. I remember that.
He went on a tear and like
he went crazy.
5 minutes. Yeah, he went crazy in 5 minutes and just blew the game open. But the against Madrid, so like we showed up and then they showed up like in the hallways and they were just like way more relaxed than us.
Right.
I see Composo holding the speaker, playing Spanish music or whatever he's playing. I was like, oh man, these dudes is relaxed. They made it a home game. So, you know, they played really more relaxed than us. So I was like, but we were like in the game the whole time. And it was unfortunate that we lost that game.
So you got the great experience of winning the title 1 year. Yeah, and then the next year, the absolutely worst experience of not winning it and
so
going to the final game.
Disappointing.
Does it make you hungrier?
Yeah. It made me hungry. I was really upset too because I didn't get to play a lot.
Yeah, you had a limited role. They said in the stats
in the Final Four. Yeah, 4 minutes I think in the third quarter.
Again in the third quarter.
So I was third. I was hot. I was so mad. I was so upset because like I think a month or 2 months before we beat Madrid in Madrid and I played great. So
yeah,
I was like,
I think I remember that game, yeah.
I was like, why didn't I play this guy? I was like, I was just upset. But whatever, we lost. And then I think that was one of the reasons I decided to leave. And I got a contract with the Timberwolves, so.
And how was that for you?
I mean, it was cool. I wanted to be home. Besides not playing. Like, do you know the NBA is, you know, it's, I mean, In some organizations, like you can't outplay who's getting paid more.
Right.
Like if they're paying somebody, they're gonna play.
You can outplay him. You're just not gonna play more than that.
Yeah, exactly. You're not. You can outplay. You could be the best shooter on the team. You could do all this, but and they'll tell you like, hey, you're gonna play, but it doesn't work like that.
What about the Chinese experience in Shanghai?
Oh, it was cool. It was cool. Like, I don't know. It was all right. But I missed Europe. Even when I was there, like, I missed, like, the competitiveness and, like, you know, how every game matters in Europe.
Yeah.
I missed that. I missed that aspect of the game. But China wasn't bad.
It's such a crazy three words, isn't every game matters? But there's no three words I've ever seen that fit to describe something better.
Wow. Every game matters.
We use it, obviously, commentating all the time. Even every possession matters or whatever. We probably overuse it. But every game matters is so cool because you lose one, two games in a row, man, and all of a sudden you look up, you're like, ooh, man, we're out of the playoff picture.
Man,
you know?
Exactly. Yes. I know that's how we feel right now.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, you got to be careful. If you slip up too much, I mean, you can find yourself on the outside looking in no time at all, especially if someone else makes a run. You know, all of a sudden you hear like a Baskonia wins five in a row. You're like, oh shit, Baskonia's won five in a row. We're in trouble.
Exactly. That's why, you know, the EuroLeague is so special. And, you know, being here with, you know, Coach, like every possession matters for him. So,
right, of course.
And that helps me as a player, you know, knowing that, like, okay, I got to be relied on. I got to do my job. I got to do what I'm supposed to do to help the team. Like, you know, like, you got to do what you're supposed to do.
Compare him, Fenerbahce and Obradovic, to Partizan Obradovic.
Funny you say that. Last week, me and him had a talk, and I was like, man, you're way lighter than you were in thinner.
That's what I think too. Like, I see him explode every now and then, but he doesn't have that same intensity that he used to have. I was like, man, did he have a health scare? Something happened?
He just targets it differently. He does it different.
Okay.
He waits till film sessions.
Oh, man. God, those are the worst. God.
Oh, man. But I think this, he's adapted to, like, the new age of the game and the new,
a lot,
you know, players and stuff like that. So he's definitely adapted, and another thing I respect about how he does things. Like, it's just not always the same thing. It's,
right.
He's trying to mix it up. He's trying to adapt to the players. You could talk to him. Maybe not during the game or right away, but you could definitely talk to him. Like, you know, you can come to him, tell him what's on your mind, and he'll listen. He'll try to change too.
You had some good times at Maccabi also. I love that city. I love Tel Aviv.
Oh, Israel, yeah, Tel Aviv. Israel's like I like my time there. Like, I like the city of Tel Aviv. It was cool, but
That's about as close as California you can get, right? Out here.
Oh, that's Cali.
That's how I've always felt about Tel Aviv. I always felt like I was in Cali.
It definitely has some Cali vibes to it. All the healthy food, the beach, the vibe, the weather. It was cool. It was cool.
I love that city, man. One of my favorite. Let me get on to a little family life, man. I mean, you sound like, you know, a lot of these guys I talk to are single or, you know, or whatever. You know, you've been like locked up and like tied down and like married with three kids for quite a while.
Yeah. Almost 10 years, almost.
Almost 10 years? So most of your career, essentially. So your wife and kids have been with you everywhere. They travel with you everywhere you go?
Yeah, like, especially like the early part, like, you know, they were with me for like the whole, pretty much whole seasons or half a season where they would come, leave, and then come back. Right. But now, you know, my daughters and my son, they're in school. They do gymnastics, soccer, acting. So it's kind of hard, and I want them to have, you know, their life. Like, I want them to have their group of friends from, you know, from childhood to adulthood. So we made that sacrifice. Like, they can't, you know, stay here the whole year.
Okay. But, so they're more back home then.
But I love having them here. Yeah, they're back home.
Okay. They're out for the holidays and all that?
Yeah. Yep. They're here, and then they left, sadly.
Yeah, that's not easy.
Sacrifice,
sometimes.
Man. No, it's not easy. It's like,
there's a lot of times where you come home and you're glad they're not there.
Man.
You know, you just like, but most of the time you come home and it's like, you know, it's just a little bit lonely, you know, no one. But y'all got FaceTime and all that other good stuff now, man.
I know, but it's like, you know, they're small, like they're younger, so I'm missing like all their, you know, accomplishments, achievements, just the small everyday things that, you know, that I want to be around for, like school drop-offs, making breakfast in the morning, helping them get ready. Those are things I really miss, and a lot of people, you know, don't understand about like the sacrifice as players like we have with families.
My kids are older now. My kids are in their 30s, man. But when I said that when I got done playing, I couldn't wait to do the school drop off every day. That got old after 3 months, my man.
Oh man, I'm gonna have a lot of time to do it.
I'm not gonna lie to you. It gets a little bit old after a while. Like, man, this is a lot harder than I thought it used to be.
Oh man, shout out to my wife, man.
They're amazing.
She's doing
man.
Everything they, by I mean, herself, yeah.
And they have to deal with us as players, which is not an easy task.
No, it's not easy. The emotions, the, you know,
losses,
attitude, you know, it's hard.
I used to say all the time back in the day when I was playing, it's like, you know, the losses were difficult for them because I come home and just not want to talk to anybody. I'd be pissed at the world. And when we won, I just wanted to go out and party with my boys.
Exactly. So leaving them there.
It was always that tough little, you know, thing. How come all your kids are named with the J? Your family's the same way. Is that a Nunnally thing?
Everybody's J. My wife's a J and all my kids are J's, so.
But what's your brother's name?
Michael.
Oh, okay, your brother's name's Michael. Okay, I thought you got it from your family.
Oh, no.
That's your wife's. So you got Jen, James. Jalen, Jade. Jalen, Jade, Jordan Grace.
Yeah.
And then, of course, James Jr. You got to get James Jr. in, right?
Had to.
Hey, you waited a long time for James Jr.
Hey, we have to say the best for last.
is that the word? Is that the last one?
From my end, yeah, that's the last one. maybe my wife wants it. Another.
Tell Jen not to watch this then.
I'm down for whatever, man. But you know, it's all good.
I got three. That's good enough for me, man. Believe me, the work doesn't go away when they get older. I'll let you know that for sure.
I'm sure.
Hey, man. Let's bust out this EuroLeague test time. I think they went easy on you, to be honest with you.
Okay.
The crossover test.
So we do the test where you got five questions. I'm sure you've already been kind of told about it, but you guys don't pay attention to it anyway, so I'll explain it to you. Each question, you got five questions. Each question is worth 10 more points. So it's 10, 20, 30, 40, 50.
Okay. All right?
Obviously, go from easier to harder. All right? Question number one worth 10 points. James Nunnally is on the clock, baby. I think he's going to take this one. Which team won the 2017 Final Four?
Fenerbahce. Oh, man.
I've had easier ones missed, believe me. Yeah. When they start out missing a 10-pointer, I'm like, oh, man, I don't know if I want to keep going through this now. All right. Which coach has the most titles in the EuroLeague era?
Zeko Obradovic.
All right. You got that. It says which coach. I ask you how many. He's got five in the EuroLeague era. He's got nine total, supposedly. I always argue that one. I'll talk to you about that some other day. Because I got a scoring title. I got a scoring title. They don't count, but they count all his titles.
They count all his stuff, huh?
Yeah, but my 63 points don't go nowhere. 30 points. You got 30 right now. This is worth another 30. Which two players won the most titles in the EuroLeague era? EuroLeague era meaning from the year 2000 to today. Which two players have won the most titles in the EuroLeague era?
Is it Rudy Fernandez and Sergio Yule? Or Kostas Lucas?
Damn, you're 0 for 3 so far.
Damn.
There's two. Kyle Hines.
Oh, Kyle Hines. Oh, no.
And Sardas Yasikevicius. They've each won four.
Oh, they were at four.
They've each won four, yeah.
Oh, damn. Okay.
I would have.
I know those other three have three.
Yeah, I knew Kyle, but I wasn't so sure about Sardis. I would have thought Sardis had three also, but. All right, number four. Here we go. This is a big one. It's a 40-pointer. You got 30 already. When was the last time Partizan reached the Final Four?
2012.
Oh. Damn, man. God, you're killing me.
2010?
I really thought you... Yeah, but I can't accept that one now.
Oh, no. I had it wrong because, oh, Bestie told me about this. Oh, man. And the picture was up on the... I just looked at the picture. I thought it was 2012.
I was going to say, man, I'm like, he's got to get this one right, right?
Oh, no. I'm sorry, Partizan fan.
2010 Final Four in Paris. They lost in the semifinals to Olympiacos and the third place game, which you haven't played yet. We can't really talk about that, though. All right, here you go. You still, let's see, you got 30, but you got a chance at 80 points here with a 50-pointer on number five. Apart from Partizan... You played for Maccabi, Milan, and Fenerbahce during your career.
Uh-huh.
Which two players have also played for these clubs?
Which two players? Only two.
Only two players, man. Yeah, this is a tough one. I'm not going to lie to you. This is the one I didn't think you were going to get.
Which one? So I know Fener and Maccabi. I know two people who play for Fener and Maccabi.
Three teams. So there's two players that have played for those three teams also.
Damn, who did I follow? Who did I follow in their footsteps? Damn. Oh, man. I want to take a guess. I say Devin Smith and Marcus Green? I don't know.
But what was the old Price is Right thing? Bum, bum,
ba, da. Oh, man, I'm bad. Damn, I'm disappointed myself.
Hey, this is a tough one. This is a tough one. I would never even got this. Ricky Hickman and Andrew Gulak.
Damn, we did play for this. I knew it. I remember those guys, too.
I remember Ricky. I don't remember Andrew playing for all three of those teams, though.
Nah, Gulak did. I remember Gulak playing for all three. Yeah, damn, because I played against him in Maccabi and in Milan.
Right. He was from Charleston, right? He went to Charleston, University of Charleston, I think.
The Mini Mamba. He played for the Lakers with Kobe.
They played for the Lakers, drafted. Exactly. Yeah, he got drafted from Charleston to the Lakers, exactly. Mini Mamba. There was a lot of Mini Mambas out there, though, that wanted to pretend.
But he was cold, though.
He was. He could shoot.
Oh, man, he could score, too. Yeah, he's definitely one of them ones.
Number one player all time for you?
Kobe. Kobe's my number one player.
Over MJ?
Yes, because Kobe's like my era. That's who I grew up on. Like, okay, I was born in the 90s, but, you know, I didn't really gravitate towards MJ. Like, it was Kobe.
Right. Okay. I love it. Kobe's my boy. But I mean, I met Kobe in Dubai, man, when we went and did a little clinic together, and he was like the coolest dude ever, man. He's just the... And man, can he play? I'm a Mike guy all day long.
Of course, I get it.
Yeah, but I'm a bit, you know, I'm not saying no to either one of them. That's for sure.
1A and 1B, they're just up there.
Exactly. For my me. Man James, dude. We talked about this last year before the Partizan playoff to get there to do this, man. And honestly, it's been a pleasure, dude. You came in with a great attitude. I know last week we were supposed to do it, but we had some things to happen. But
yep.
I would have rather canceled and done this today and enjoy the conversation with you, man. Enjoy the moment. And next time you come to Madrid or next time I go to Belgrade, we'll sit down and have that beer. We'll talk a little bit more in depth.
Yep, I got you, man. Thank you for having me on. I appreciate it, Joe.
All right, my man. I'm gonna love this interview, man. This podcast is gonna be great. Thanks, James.
Yes,
appreciate
sir.
It, brother.
Yes, sir. Have a good one.
Thanks for listening to The Crossover with Joe R. Lucas. If you like what you've heard, subscribe now so you don't miss an episode and leave us a review on iTunes and Apple Podcasts. You can also get in touch via Twitter and Instagram at EuroLeague using the hashtag ELCrossover or on Facebook at the EuroLeague.